Okay, Stan, we're going to start asking you some questions, and take your time if you like and think about it a little bit before you answer, and make sure you say what you want to say, all right? Now, the first question that we want to ask you today is, can you remember far back the earliest thing that you can remember that happened to you when you were young? The very first thing that you remember from your youth or your childhood?
Well, I can remember back a long ways, but I remember a lot of things back a long ways.
Okay. Give us the first one. What's the first thing that comes to mind?
Bert Begler and my dad had a mule that was half broke, and we was on Bert Begler's place, and Bert said, "I wish I had somebody," Bert Begler said, "I wish I had somebody that could ride that mule." Dad said, "Well, Stan can ride him." And it about scared me to death. So they had him all saddled up, and Dad throwed me up on him. The mule took off. And that place of Bert Regler's was that whole area that, what's his name, Red? Ron, not Ron.
LaRon.
What is his name?
LaRon Allred.
Yes, what?
LaRon Allred.
Yeah.
The dry farm.
Yeah, the dry farm LaRon owns now. And that mule took off that way. And I tried to stop him or slow him down. And then he went that way, and I couldn't get him stopped or slow him down enough to jump off. And then he run right back to Dad and Bert Regler and stopped. I thought, boy, that's good, but I'm getting off of here now. And that's one of the first things that I remember. I think I must have been about, I could have been 3 or 4 years old. Mm-hmm. Mm. And I pulled on him and I pushed and I said, "Whoa," and nothing worked until he come back to Dad and Bert and stopped. Now that's one of the first things.
Okay.
But I remember another thing. Arnold Begler, I was around the Beglers quite a little bit, and Arnold Begler was the second son of Bert Begler, and he said, "I'm going to bulldog a sheep," and I said, "How are you going to do that?" And he said, "When you get on behind me on this horse, and I'll show you." So I got on behind him, and we headed through the bunch, and Arnold spotted a sheep that he's going to bulldog. And he fell off on supposed to be the sheep, but the sheep had gone. All he hit was the ground. And I remember that well, because he said, he told me before we done this. Now he said, "When I fall off of here, you get up in the saddle." So that's just what I done too. But that was the end of our bulldog. And I remember the end of World War I. When Uncle Harb come back from the army, and he had a I think he had a girlfriend before he went in the Army. I don't know if they were married or not. But when he come back from the Army, he was quarantined for, I think, a month or... I don't know just how long, 2 weeks or a month. I think it was a month. And she said, I'm going and live with him, and then we're going to get married. And that kind of made us all think funny, because we thought maybe they had been married. But anyway, when they got back, it was a fall kind of open. And they said, well, where are they going to live to be quarantined? And we had an old house that we'd built up on the hill to prove up on our dry farm, well, our hill ground. We had 200 or 300 acres there. And so we got a wagon, as I remember. And there was a little bit of snow, but not much. And we gathered up what each one could gather up and sent up with them, got some groceries for them, and they went up to this place and they stayed there for a month. Now, they had to get their own wood up there, and there was plenty of wood on the place. All he had to do was chop it down and take it in and build a fire. But anyway, they lived up there for a month, and then they come back down. But when they come back down, there was snow on the ground. But they brought the wagon back anyway, because there wasn't enough to stop the wagon. And that was the start of their life. Now, that was Uncle Harv Steed. Now, I don't suppose any of you guys, you can't remember him, can you?
A little bit, I remember him.
I thought he was the best guy in the world. Went to the Army and come back, never got killed. So I had a good feeling of him all my life. Well, all of his life, I mean. And he went to, he moved to Utah. And I don't know where he was working, but he went to the park, Yellowstone Park, for an outing, and he died while he was up to Yellowstone Park. But I think he was living in Ogden. I'm not sure. But that was the end of his life.
Well, Stan, let me ask you our next question, if I may. I omitted one earlier. What is your birthday, and how old are you now?
Well, I'm 96. And my birthday is December 9th, 1911.
1911.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. The next question is, your name is Stanley Steed. How did your parents arrive at this name? Is this a family name, or is there another story behind how you were named?
Just what do you mean now? How I got my name?
Yes.
Well, to start with, I guess my dad and mother got married, and I was the second child that they had. And I was born, and mother said that that day that I was born, it was 60 degrees below zero in Auburn, in that milking parlor that the Draney boys, Leno's family, are using today to milk their cows in. Mm-hmm. and they got a grain bin up in the top. So it's still in use.
Okay.
It's a log building.
Okay. Can you tell us where you grew up?
It's gotta be Ogden, or Auburn,
Auburn.
I mean.
Okay. Can you remember anything about Auburn in your early life? What was it like? You already mentioned the weather. Tell us a little bit about the weather and what Auburn looked like, what was happening over there at that time.
Well, the weather seemed like the winters were always cold when I was little. But I wanted to go with Dad wherever he went. And I think two or three times I must have froze the hands. I see they're not very pretty now. I can bend them a little bit, but anyway, that, when they're as crooked, they're not very good. But I can still use them.
Sure. Okay.
But it was just cold all the time, it seemed like, in the winter time. Mm-hmm. And we had snow that the top wire on a fence, we had four wires on the fence, and each about that far apart. The winters, we had enough snow that when it crested in the spring, along in March, we could drive a team right across that fence to feed the cattle or the horses. So, see, in comparison, look what we got now. The winter half gone and not hardly any snow. Well, it isn't quite half gone, but then it's going to be a new year soon anyway, and the shortest day soon.
You grew up on a farm?
Yeah, and, okay. And what farm that we didn't have, I worked for Cranny's. Mm-hmm. Cyril and King Cranny.
When you were young on the farm, did you have chores, or what did you do for working or entertainment?
One chore I had was walk from that where that milking porter is I told you about, up to Bert Baker's and get a gallon of milk and bring back home. That was one of my chores every morning.
How old were you at that time?
Oh, I was just a little guy. I'd keep changing it. That bucket had a bale on, and I'd keep changing it from one hand to the other because that one got tired. But I kept it coming because it was cold.
Okay. Did you or your parents do any traveling at all during the summertime? Did they visit relatives?
I traveled. Dad was somewhere else, and I traveled. Mm-hmm. Dad was a born sheep herder, I think, because he was herding sheep all the time. And years ago, there used to be about 30 herds of sheep come over the what they call the Tygee Ridge, and down over Mabee's place, and onto the road, and then head for Grays River. And they'd done that for years and years. So at that time, if Dad had a herd of sheep, when they lambed out, they lambed in, say, Crow Creek. Dad would, I don't know how he got word to Mother, but he'd say, "Let's stand. Get on the horse and meet me up at Crow Creek, and I'll be there to help him across the river." And I'd do that. See, it's quite a ways from Auburn to Crow Creek over the hills. I had a little pacing horse, and I could make that ride the one way in about an hour. Or back home in about an hour. I'd get up on the ridge, and then he could pace about 15 miles an hour, and he'd hardly ever break a pace. Because I wanted, when I was headed south, I wanted to hurry and get to Dad. When I was headed north, I wanted to hurry and get home.
So, okay, all right.
So I done the traveling, and he just waited for me to come, and if he wanted to tell Mother anything, or he'd send a letter for me to give to Mother about when she was going to get a check from Charlie Johnson out here, the old Charlie Johnson or someone like that, you know. And it wasn't much money, but at that time you needed it. I'm sure it was one of the best paying jobs it was, because there was 11 kids in our family, six girls and four boys. And I can truthfully say I never did go hungry in all my life. So.
And that was even during the cold winters that we had?
Well, in the winters, Dad would go to the desert with a herd of sheep. And he'd herd them out on the Wyoming desert. And I remember one time, I think I was 12 years old, and the Crow Creek Road was open. That is, it was open one day, closed the next maybe. But anyway, there was freighters going out there on sleighs. And we needed coal, so Mother sent me with the team and sleigh with a box. I could haul 2 ton of coal. I think it was 2 ton. It might have been 1 ton. So I went out with two or three of the freighters, like the Stokers. Bernie Stoker, that's Bill Stoker's dad, and Clarence Vander, Henry Vander, and they said I could go with them and they'd take care of me. So we went to, going out, we went to the halfway house the first night, what they called the halfway house. Went up to, a ranch this side of there at noon, and then went on to the halfway house that night. Then the next morning, we'd get up and go down to Hankey's, they called it, down, within about 10 miles of Montpelier. And then in the afternoon, we'd drive down to Montpelier. And Dad said, you go in the Burgoyne Hotel, and don't you open the door to anybody, only me, when you get there. So that's what I done. And he come in there about, just getting dark one night on the train. He'd come from Little America. Him. So that's one thing I remember, sending me out there to get a load of coal with those guys. And I was way the youngest one of any of them.
How old were you?
I must have been 10 or 12 years old. I could drive a team good. And I could take care of them. I could harness them. And there wasn't much to take care of, only stay on the road. And if we got stuck, grab a shovel and go help. Okay. Until we got through the drift or whatever there was. But it all worked out good.
Tell us, Dan, what were the names of your parents and where were they from?
Well, my dad was from Ogden. His name was Franklin Burton Seed. And my mother was Pearl DeLore Lindbergh. And she lived in Logan at first, then they moved to Auburn. And what else was it you wanted to know?
Well, just that. What were they like? Do you have any memories of your mother and father? Or kind memories of your mother and father, or loving memories? Or do you recall them very well? I'm sure you do. Anything special about them that you remember?
Well, there was quite a few special things. We was a poor Auburn, or people in Auburn, I think. And we lived off of the road about 2 miles, and it was up through that dry farm I was telling you about, of the Ron Allreds. And when we got up to the place that we was proving up on, why, we had a house up there, but we had to build a house. And when we got there, that was our home. And we lived there in the summertime, and in the wintertime we'd move back to Auburn. But we spent one winter up there, I can remember, when I was little. And we were traveling up toward home. We got up in the middle of that field, and wind was a-blowing, and Mother and Dad was there just for Christmas. And Dad says the team's lost the road. So he said, "You guys sit here and don't move, don't try to go anyplace till I find the road again." So he went, he was gone, it seemed like five or ten minutes, that's probably only half that time. Dad said, "I found the road." We was just off from about one horse off to the side. And then right by where we were spending our Christmas, there's a hill, pretty steep. And Dad was a pretty good skier, but he wanted to see how Mom skied. Well, Mom didn't ski so good. She got down there a little ways, and then she just fell all over the hillside. So that ended her skiing. But it was fun anyway, it seemed like. And I had measles or mumps when I was up there, and my grandma was taking care of us. All of my parents was in Afton. And I remember going out. I had to be about 5 years old or something. I got out of bed and run around the house, and I remember Grandma chasing me. And she said, "Get in the house, or if you don't get in the house, it's pneumonia that's going to kill you." So the next round I come around, I went in the house. But I wasn't mean, but I was kind of mischievous, I guess.
Okay, you mentioned that your parents had 11 children all told. Could you give us their names, please, starting with the oldest?
Well, Lenore was the oldest. She was older than me. I was second. Myrtle was third. June was fourth. Virginia was fifth. Now, let's see, Virginia, fifth. Then come
Devere.
I gotta think a minute. I'm down to Virginia. Well, there's Lida.
Devere first.
And then
DeVere was.
Junior, no, DeVere, and then Jack, and then Dolly, or Lyda, and then Dolly, and Jim.
Junior.
And no, Junior, and then Jim. Yeah. That was 11 of us.
Okay. Do you remember any special experiences that you had with your brothers and sisters, or playing with them, or working with them, or?
Oh, we had. You know, we lived up in the bushes, and we took chickens up in there with us. We'd every night we'd hunt eggs, and they'd build a nest any place. Sometimes we'd find all the eggs. Other times we'd miss a finding a nest, you know. We'd find a whole nest of eggs. Then we'd leave them alone, and maybe there'd be some little ones come out of them eggs. So we had that happen all summer long. And we picked berries. Sorbus berries and choke cherries, used berries. Mother'd make us lemonade if we'd go over the hill and get some cold water out of a spring. And there was cattle over in the next draw, but they fixed the spring so the cattle couldn't get in the spring. And then she'd make the lemonade, and I know we had two dogs, and Dad said, "Now when you go over there to get water, always take old Husky and Tiger." And he said, "No calf, no bull or cow on earth will run them dogs away from you kids." And they didn't. But we made several trips over the hill to get water for lemonade.
Did you play any games of any kind with your brothers and sisters?
Yeah, we played games. Sometimes we'd invite the bigger kids up to play games with us, have a bonfire, and I don't know, we had something to eat. I don't remember what we had, but we had something. I know Mother was good at fixing something to eat, and then they'd go back home. But they were the closest and only neighbor that we had about there for a long time. Other than my grandpa and grandma Lindbergh, they were just across the street from where that log place that Drainies are using now for a milking parlor. They were just east of that about a half a block. And they were good to us. We could come down there any time, and they'd take us in and give us some bread and jam or something we liked, you know. And then if it got late, she'd send us back up home, which was about 2 miles. So that was what we, our outings that we had. That's about as far away as we got. Until I got older.
Were there any special kind of games that you played that you specifically liked?
Yeah, but it's been so long that I can't remember. We had bonfires down there. And, Walt Roos and Roy Roos and me, we'd gather up all the things that we could find, the old boards or old pieces of wood. And then we'd have a bonfire, and we'd play Run Sheep Run or something like that. And by then we was able to get a weenie or some darn thing like that and bake it in you got a hanky. We bake it in the fire. Thank you. And that was, you know, something like that was our recreation, to go out and have a bonfire. And we could invite kids all around there, and they were all fairly close. But the buddies that I had, the closest to me is Walt and Roy Roos, High and May Roos's kids. And their kids are still around here now. And they had 11 kids in there playing.
Did your parents or friends have any nicknames for you? Did you have a name besides, did they know you other than by Stanley or Stan?
The only nickname I ever got that I can remember of was when I was a Hall Milk and they called me Stan the Man. That's
the
all.
Man. How about that? Okay.
Now, when I was a Hall Milk, this kid came out and he ordered a pound of butter. And I said to him, "That's McHale right now." We talked about this not long ago. I said to McHale, "You want a big pound or a little pound?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I'll go see Mom." So he went and seen his mom, and I guess he sent him back, but I was gone when he got back.
What was Christmas like when you were young?
What
was fun about Christmas?
We were thankful for anything we got. Sometimes we'd get an orange. We'd get some peanuts that you had to shell. None of them ever shelled then. You had to shell your own. A little bit of candy. And we'd try to get the biggest, longest sock and thought maybe we'd get more stuff if we got the longest sock. But measured out, putting her the same for all of us. You know, when you have 11 kids, you got to divide up. Mm-hmm. And you don't take it all, you don't give it all. Yeah.
Okay. Was there any special way that your family had of celebrating your birthdays?
Oh, Mother would just make a batch of cookies or something like that, you know, and we'd all sing happy birthday, and that's just another day when we was kids.
Okay. What church do you belong to?
LDS.
LDS Church? Okay. Do you remember your baptism and where it was performed?
Yeah, I remember my own self when I was baptized. Bishop George and Billy Walton baptized me. And I know right where I was baptized. And the water was cold. You know, I wasn't baptized in the winter when my birthday was. Mm-hmm. That was too cold. But we waited until spring and then decided to get baptized. And I know Bishop George, he was the bishop there. And when he ducked me under, somebody says his one toe was out of the water, so he ducked me back in again, and I said, "Oh, Judas Priest," and he shoved me in again.
Yeah. Tell us about your school days. Tell us how you felt about school, where you went to school, what were your favorite subjects?
Recess was my favorite. I never did care about it. I didn't hate school, but I didn't like it either. We had good teachers and we had better ones. But the better ones could teach us something, but the others couldn't teach us anything. I remember Russell Woods. I don't think any of you guys remember him. When it came coasting time in the spring, he wasn't the principal. George Crawford lived right down here in Afton. He was the principal. But we'd coax Russell Woods until he'd say, "Well, I'll let you go if you crawl out that window and come back in that window when you come back." We promised to do that. And we went coasting for an hour, and we come back and crawled in the window. Now, he was one of the, and then Lamore Hale, he was another second Russell Wood. He was good too. Now, I wasn't going to school at this time, but at this time, Lamore climbed up on the schoolhouse to see what was making the smoke come down in the chimney and or in the building instead of going out the chimney. Then the kids took the ladder down and wouldn't let Lamore down. And I think probably people come along and put us in place. And Lamore got down anyway.
Did you have any unusual or exciting adventures during your youth? Anything really special? Hunting, fishing, or encounters with wild animals, or anything of that sort?
We had Walton Roy and me. He decided a good thing to do would break horses. So all we had was a wagon with a hay rack on. And it wasn't too good a hay rack. But we only had one horse broke, and the other one, we had, had four horses to choose from, but only one was broke. So we decided to hook that one that was broke with one of them colts and hook them on the wagon. And Roy would take one long rope and go one way and I'd take the other, and then Walt would be the driver. He was the oldest. And, you know, we got them hooked up. And Walt got in there, and we cut him loose. And Walt drove them around, and us had pulled on, me had pulled one way, and Roy the other. We got him to make a circle, and then stopped him again. And so that was about the end of our excitement that one day. But we'd done that again several times, and we finally got another one broke. But it was, you know, we didn't break them good, but it satisfied us.
Did you have any embarrassing experience as a child that you wouldn't mind telling us?
Well, I imagine I've had experience. embarrassing experiences. But it was later on in life when I was older, when I had them experiences, and I was working for King Cranny, and I broke a lot of horses for King, and he led the horse out of the barn, and I was a following right behind, and there was a step there about that high, and the horse had to step down and then back up when he come in. But King was taking his horse out to water, and he's older than I am, so I guess he should be the boss. And then it was his horses anyway, and his ground. And anyway, he took the horse out the door. This was a colt. He broke to lead, but he wasn't broke no other way. And I thought, well, when that horse stepped down there off of that step, that'd be a good place to get on him. So I just take a hop and hopped up on him and grabbed the mane hold. And he started to buck and putting a run over King. And he was just taking the horse to water. And he turned to me and he said, "What in hell goes on?" And I said, "I'm trying to ride this horse, I guess." And it was embarrassing too. Because I shouldn't have been on there.
Dan, tell us about the incident you had with the schoolhouse burning.
It was early one morning, probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And there was a few clouds in the sky over Auburn. And all at once there was a hard crack, and Dad got out of bed, and when he got out, I followed him, and we soon seen where the lightning hit the old schoolhouse, and it had a big bell in the top of it, and we stood around there watching for that bell to fall down. We knew it was going to fall sometime, but we wondered just how long that it would stay up there, because it was heavy, before it fell. Well, it stayed until there were just little stilts about, and then things started tumbling. But when that tumbled down, it went in the ground half covered up or more. It was a big bell. It was one that big, about as big as that table, wasn't it? And it went halfway in the ground. So it had to be heavy. And what else would you like to know? It burnt the schoolhouse right down to the ground anyway.
Okay.
What year was that?
Oh, I haven't got the year. I don't know.
Question. Can I ask a question? Was this the same building that the piano was in upstairs? Or is that the other building?
Yeah, because they used that for dance hall, too.
Somebody said the piano stayed suspended on the second floor until the building was nearly gone, and then it fell too.
Yeah, they used to have dances there.
Up in the second story was a dance hall and a gymnasium.
Yeah, there was a long flight of steps that went off of the main road that went through this way. Of course, it was off of the road two ways. But it went up there, it seemed like 100 steps. I don't know how many steps it was, but there was a lot of them. And there were three big rooms. They were big rooms. And there was, each teacher had about three grades. We had three teachers there. I know this here, Crawford, he rode a horse from down here on that street where Ted Linford lived, just a little farther north, every morning, and then back every night, through the fields. And I'm sure he got cold a lot of times, because he'd be over there 9 o'clock to start school in the morning and leave there about 4 o'clock in the afternoon to come home. So, but he stayed home all winter long.
Stan, we understand you had an interesting experience with the Indians here. Could you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Well, it wasn't much to that. It was there's a tribe, or I don't know, three or four wagons. They had one covered wagon, I believe, and the others were just wagons and people, you know, and leading horses. They said, have you got any horses to trade? Dad said, no, but he said, I got a boy I'll trade you. The boy about scared me to death. I thought Dad was going to trade me all the time. After they talked a while, Dad said, I wouldn't trade that boy for all your horses. But it made me think, I'll tell you. And they were headed up Stump Creek. And I thought, I could just see myself going with them. And for years, they used to come to Auburn, and below that road, that lower road that goes through Auburn, on the creek there, them willows were as thick as hair on a dog's back. And the Indians would come and live there for a week at a time. And we got so we dared to go over there, and if we had a deer hide or something, we could trade for a pair of gloves or something like that. We'd do it, you know. But our parents always told us that when you go over there, we want to know where you go and when you go and when you come back. Because I guess they didn't trust the Indians either. So the story wasn't very long, but then it had some meaning to it anyway.
Let's talk a little bit more about your teenage years. Were you, did you like to read? Was there any particular books or things that you liked to read about?
I was a poor reader.
Okay.
I still am.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't mind school once I got there. And I was fairly good in school once I got there. Then I tried to get out of school every time I could. I'd do anything almost to get out of school. I'd dicker with Dad. I'd say, you know, Dad, if you'd let me stay home today, I'll haul that whole manure pile out and scatter it. Dad said, you can't learn as a team. I said, yes, I can. He said, well, how did you get the collars on them? And I said, I get up in the manger and I buckle a collar up and slip it over their heads. So Dad took that. That's the way you do it if you can't do it the other way. And so he finally let me do that because he wanted that menorah for a move. And I don't know. We like to go coast, and then we went out to Sulphur Springs, and Dad let me take the team and wagon and haul a whole bunch of kids in there. And I was only, 12 years old then or something like that. But I could drive the team and handle them all right. And I was more on the horse line than I was in the school line. And I only went to, you might say, to the seventh grade.
Okay.
And one little I know I've had to pick up, it's been hard to pick up a little more, but then some people like to talk to me anyway.
You talked about the school with dance hall and stuff like that. Did you ever go to dances when you were a teenager?
Yeah, I'd go to dances, but I never did dance. Ain't that funny?
Oh, okay.
All the other kids danced. And the girls would try to get, they'd drag me out on the floor and try to get me to go, and I might make one round with them, and I'd say, oh, I can give out.
Did you have a girlfriend at this time?
Oh, yeah, I had two or three girlfriends. Yeah, I didn't have no trouble finding girlfriends. Maybe it was just I liked them, whether they liked me or not, I don't know. But girls kind of help you, you know. If you don't want to do something, there's always some girl that wants to help you do it. And they'll help you with the things in school, you know, too. You've probably done it.
Were you into hunting or fishing or trapping when you were young?
I went fishing one time with a long pole, as long as from here to that wall or longer. And I put a bait on that and a hook as big as that finger there. And I went up in the willows and I spotted some fish in the hole. But I knew if I got too close to the fish, they'd leave, go up the creek or down. So I throwed the hook and line up that way and it came back to me. And about the third time I throwed it up there like that and got caught. And I couldn't get it loose, so I throwed the pole and line and everything, and I turned and went home, and I've never been back since. So I'm no fisherman.
Did you do any hunting or trapping?
I trapped muskrats one time, and I got a few of them, but I couldn't stand to skin them, so I quit that. But I went hunting for Ted Frohman, and I got all the hunting I wanted. I, I hunted for 2 months up there, and I was glad to get out of that, 2 different years. And we filled up every year, and I had good hunts. And I didn't like just dressing them out either. I don't know, my hands didn't like to work in blood. Something wrong. I don't know what.
Well, let's move into your adult life now. Tell us about your meeting your first wife, your wife to be.
Well, what would you like to know about her?
Okay, tell her who she was, where you met her, and how you fell in love with her.
Well, my first wife was a weaver. That was the name, Weaver. Wells Weaver. Wells and Ozimba Weaver was their names. And Fontella was her name. And I don't know, we went to shows. We come over to Afton and went to shows. We, in the wintertime, we'd drive a team, and a bunch of us would just fill the sleigh box up and with some quilts over us, and we'd head for Afton. And when we got here, we'd see the show and then head back. Sometimes we'd have a split Sunday or split bananas or something in Gillette Charles' place, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't remember Gillette, I don't. She owned this house right down the street. Where is it? Down this street?
Third Avenue.
This isn't here.
No.
Third.
He owned that when he worked in the drugstore here. Best guy you ever seen. He'd let us come and sit in a booth, you know, and we could have a nut sundae or banana split and for about 25 cents, and oh, it was good. and then we went to Thane to dances, and I still never danced, but they had roller skating there, and I tried to roller skate, and the girls helped me with that, but I know I went down on the back of my head a time or two. And I never did get to conquer that roller skating. And I liked to watch fights. We had lots of fights in them days here. Mm-hmm. Just, they'd have guys come in from outside, you know, and match them up with some of the guys here in Star Valley. And they had some good fights, too. They were good matches. I see Ted Moffat put Fritz Tolman in there one time in one of the papers, but he wasn't the only one. There's a lot of others in there. There's Ern Gardner and all the Gardner boys, Daryl Gardner and Ted Moffat wasn't too bad himself. I see him hit somebody and knock him out one time. But anyway, we kind of like to go to them. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then she invited me to dinner a time or two. And I thought, boy, she's a good cook. And I went every time she invited me. And finally, we got married. Went to Paris, and my mother and Eb Richardson and his wife and Wells Weaver went with us. But right after we got married, Fontella's mother died having the last baby that they had. And so that made him a widower. And he was a widower until, how many years was it? 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
Then he married again.
Yeah.
And he had another family.
He married your sister.
Yeah, that's right. We got related again. So.
Where did you live after you got married? You live in Auburn?
Every house in Auburn. And one in Lake Town.
Oh, yeah.
Garden City.
Garden City, was it?
Yeah.
Well, it was put near Lake
Town.
Yeah,
near.
But anyway, we tried every house. And I guess what was wrong, I guess we didn't pay a rent. Near as I can see. They didn't want us no more. But we finally got a home of our own about 55 years ago. And we're still living in it. And we got what I think is a nice home. For me, anyway. It wouldn't be for people nowadays. But we got all we need there. Or I have. I'm alone now, too. Dean and Craig was with me when I had to go in the hospital. I went in there for 2 months, was it?
No, a week.
More than a week. Well, I was over here a week. Idaho Falls another
3 days.
Mm-hmm. And I fell in the bathtub in Idaho Falls backwards. And I was in worse shape when I got out of there than I was when I went in. So they discharged me from there. And that's the end of it down there, only I had to pay him a lot of money. Yep. And I hope that takes care of them, because I just paid the other day. But they jumped. They sent me that I... a dinner that I owed $992, was it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And so we wanted an itemized statement. So Dina phones them and they sent the itemized statement and they put $9,999 on it. So we paid the first one and hope that that satisfies them. Ain't that the truth?
Do you remember anything special about your marriage to Fontella?
Yeah.
Special thing.
One thing special.
Okay.
We went to Paris to get married. And when we came back home, they was having a dance in Auburn that night. So we went to Weaver's place, and she had a big dinner all fixed for us. Not for everybody, but for me and my wife anyway. And so we went there for a while that night, then we decided to go to the dance. So we went over there, and when the dance let out, I wound up in Tyee, Wyoming, Idaho, I mean, and I think she went out to Sulphur Springs with Rena Hyde. So some more about our marriage.
Now this was a Chevrolet or what?
Well, it's supposed to be a Chevrolet, I guess, because, but
okay.
Did you ever know Clarence Miller? He's a big guy, stands as high as that ceiling. And it was him and two Draney boys sitting on me in a one bunk sleigh. They go on a tie so I wouldn't get away and go back. So you'd have went too. Old Clarence weighed 300 pounds. I didn't have a chance to get away. The next day, we brought a load of logs to Afton to have sawed into lumber from Draney's. Wendell let us take the team and bring it over, and I'm sure they got the lumber back on the Draney Ranch sometime later. But anyway, we went to town that day, took us the whole day, and got back, and we, see, where'd we start living? I guess we started living with her dad for a while. Because he had lost his wife, you know. Yeah. And they had three kids. Verda, Trelma,
Gail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We kind of helped raise them. Her being the oldest girl. And that's about our marriage.
Okay. Now, make sure I get this straight. The three names that we just mentioned, these were a different family. These are not Stan's children?
No.
Oh, okay.
They're
sisters. Mother's sisters.
Oh, okay.
Mother's.
Tell us about your children. And the names of them.
My children, well, there's the first one.
Well, you lost one, the first one.
Well, yeah, we did. I was going to count them that are living.
Well, that's all right. Whatever.
But, I don't remember the dates on the others anyway. But they died right after birth anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got one of them named, didn't we?
All three of them.
We got all three of them named.
Yeah,
but anyway.
Well, then you was second or third?
I was the second.
Okay, and he's the 5th of May. I can't tell you what year.
1932.
Okay. And Shirley, we just lost her. And Dina and Craig.
You need two more babies.
I don't know about why I can't get over this, but I love Shirley so much that it, just to mention her name, I just finally go to pieces. I can't help it. I love the others the same, but we still have.
Would you tell us what kind of work you did for a living then to support your family?
I'd done everything. Mm-hmm. I'd done everything. In the summertime, me and Lyle Walton would go to the canyon and get wood and sell for people, you know, sell to them. Or we got our own logs out to build our house. And I worked for Crannies for, altogether I must have worked for them for 10 years. I'd put their crops in or done most of it. I was little enough that I could drive the tractor, but I couldn't lift a sack of grain. And then they'd fill the drill up with grain, and then they'd go do something else, and one of them would come back and fill it again. And I just kept going around and around. And I'd done that for about 2 years, and then I got so I could lift a sack of grain and fill it. They didn't have to come and fill it for me. And we chased wild horses out there. If that's, there's no money in it, but then we chased them anyway. And we hayed for Crannies. They used to let me off from haying about an hour before they let the rest of them off. And we used to do everything with horses, you know. And they'd let me off to go get the cows in and start milking. And we milked about 30 head of cows. Sometimes I'd get them all milked before they quit haying. Sometimes I have a few left, and they'd come and help me. LaVonna and Janice, they'd come and help me. They run scatter rake and a windrow rake. Each one of them did. But they were good help to help milk too. And what else did I? Oh, I hauled milk for about 30 years to the Swiss Creamery out here in Osmond and down to Thane too. We had, well, at that one time when I was hauling milk, and then Metcalf, the school teacher, he came over and he said, why don't you bid on a bus? And I said, well, I've got the milk route, you know. And he said, well, I've learned that if you can't get anybody else, ask the busiest guy in the country. So I got a bus, and I run the bus for 6 years. And we got by good, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. Mother drove the bus, and you hauled the milk.
Yeah, I hauled the milk, and then I hauled kids in the
afternoon.
Well, in the mornings, I'd usually gather the kids in there, and you drove the truck to Aft, milk truck. Then I'd get in the milk truck and go to Fairview and Smoot and back to Auburn and take the milk to the creamery. Then in the afternoon, we had to catch our own ride back to Afton, or take our own car, you know. They didn't treat us like they do these people now. We had to find our own ride back to get the bus. But now they can run the buses all around, go get their mail and everything else. And they claim that we don't pay for it, but we do. We pay for it. Don't think we don't. Pay for it in taxes. Dina used to drive the which one did you drive? You drove the car back home at night. If I had to take my car, there's three of us in Auburn, all kids. Herb Johnson and Seth Moser, Rex Hepworth, and me. And anyway, we managed, and I ran it for 6 years. And Harold Papworth, which I didn't think much of when he quit. My bus never had a moor on it, and he never wouldn't give me an extra year or two, so I had to sell it to come out on it all. I had to buy the gas for it and everything. Well, it wasn't $3 a gallon then.
You had to go get your own bus too. Didn't check back.
You buy their own bus.
I don't know whether you bought. Did you buy your own bus?
Oh, yeah.
They had to buy their own bus and then go get it back. Where did you go?
Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah. All they did was get a wage.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Huh? All you did was get a wage for driving the bus.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yes, I got a wage for driving the bus. That's right.
You paid your own expenses, your own repairs,
and everything.
Yeah, I had to pay for it, gas it, and oil it, and everything.
Yeah.
And that's when Carvin Linford was helping sell Bluebird, and they've stuck with the Bluebird all these years. And mine was a Carpenter, and it was in good shape. It didn't have any miles on it because I'd drive it aft and I'd leave it there all day. Then I'd pick the kids up and deliver the kids, keep it there all night, and vice versa, just keep like that. Some of the buses, you know, nowadays they let them take them home or wherever they want to go. But
he parked it there. Grandpa and Grandma Steed had a house on the corner where the junior high is.
Yeah.
And Dad would park the bus there. And so he had a place to park the bus every day, and you know.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, Stan, is there any one particular thing that you feel is your greatest accomplishment in life, or has meant the greatest joy to you?
I never done anything great, but I was busy as anybody all the time. When I was hauling milk, I got as many as 200 head of cattle and rented ground and put on the ground that Dad had over there and fenced it, that is, kept the fence up, and sold them in the fall, made a little profit. Not a whole lot, but a little bit. And I hayed some land, only about 40 acres, so I couldn't keep anything much through the winter. And I didn't want to anyway, because I was busy all day anyway with the school bus and hauling the milk and everything. Oh, but I never done anything great in my life that I can ever think of anyway.
Okay. Shelby, Dina, is there anything that you think of that we ought to talk about that we've overlooked?
Well, he had a nice family. He's got a nice family.
Excellent.
I got as good a family as there is in the world.
She'll help you home milk.
Yeah. I've only got four of them, but they're all good. Mary Jo helps.
Okay, well, we want to thank you for helping us, helping the Star Valley Historical Society obtain this information.
Yeah, I thank Dina. I thank Shelby, Mary Jo, Craig. Have I left anybody else?
Shirley,
she was...
A lot of grandchildren.
Yeah, a lot of grandchildren.
Great-grandchildren.
They wasn't a whole lot of help, though.
No.
But you've got them.
Well, we got them, but...
That's right, Dad.
I can truthfully say...
You can't disown them.
No.
Well, I can't disown them, but... They never give me any more help than they needed to. I don't know if everybody's grandkids are that way or not. But, some of them, they'd come and work for a little bit, but then they'd get hay fever or something and have to leave. You couldn't keep them very long. I don't know anybody that I could keep very long. Shelby, maybe. I helped Shelby haul a little hay, too, that he used to haul hay on a truck and a trailer and out to Rock Springs and, I think, Colorado a time or two, didn't we?
Yeah. We had some wild experience.
Maybe we passed Colorado, I don't know. Well, it was a long ways.
Wild excursions, huh, Shel? Oh.
But I love them all anyway. And I thank a lot of you, Ed. He was good to me when I was in Auburn and he was in Auburn. I'm still in Auburn. And these people here, I've seen them before. I know. They've been good to Dina.
They have. They've been my home teachers for years. Yep, they have.
They're good to everybody. You know,
they are good.
That is West Enders. Used to be, anyway. But anyway, they come up one day and they said, Stan, we've been thinking things over, and we're going to have to let you go. And I said, well, what have I done? He said, nothing. Well, I said, why are you letting me go? And he said, well, it's costing us too much money to herd the sheep. So, he said, well, if you get your stuff that's here, we'll pay you what we owe you and we'll take you home. So, we went home all right, and that fall, they had their sheep, and they were over on Grays River. So, here they come. And they said, Stan, we'd like to hire you back again. And I said, well, what's the deal this time? And they said, well, we learned our lesson about letting you go. Now, if you'll go bring that herd of sheep off of the hill there, Grays River, we'll give you work the rest of the winter. And I thought, well, that's quite tempting. But the more I thought about it, I thought, I'm not going to do that. That's the only time them guys know what it is to be out there. So I waited till the last day and I said, I can't go over there and get that herd of sheep. And they said, why not? And I said, I'd never forgive myself. You canned me when I needed it. Now, because you need me, you want me back. So I said, you just find somebody else. And I did get a kick out of that. And if Ian Hilliard and Quill Taylor was here, I'd tell them that too.
Did they find somebody else, or did they have to bring them down themselves?
One of them had to go over.
Oh, they did.
And that's just what I wanted.
Smart man. Uh-huh.